So thank you all for inviting me to speak to your meeting today. Matt, as you just mentioned, that I've been living in Mayapur for quite some time. We actually moved there in 1996, so over 25 years. Today is a kind of special event. I don't know whether any of you have been to Mayapur or not. Those that have, you'll undoubtedly know about the twin English pujaris that we have, Jnanivas and Pankajangiri. They've been on the Mayapur project since 1971 and 73. So, unfortunately, this last week, due to this coronavirus that's sweeping India at the moment, it's like a bit of a viral, like a wave that's sweeping the country. As a result of that, Pankajangiri Prabhu got infected. There was a lot of effort to try to get him through the crisis. Eventually, they brought him back here to Mayapur about 4 or 5 days ago. And unfortunately, he left his body 3 days ago, I think on March the 4th. So this last few days, we've been having some special events, although it's very difficult because the government has imposed another lockdown in West Bengal. So nobody's allowed to congregate in groups. So despite that, we went ahead with a special commemoration program for Pankajangiri Prabhu. There's a 24-hour kirtan mela going on in his honor. That began at last night at midnight. It will continue on until midnight tonight. If any of you want to log into that, that's on YouTube and then mayapur.tv. That should get you through to that event. So I thought it would be nice if we could remember a little bit about Pankajangiri Prabhu. I had numerous interactions with him over the years. And so I'll just speak for a few minutes on that, and then we may open the meeting out for questions and answers. So the twins, as we call them, they were born in 1944. I think now they're 77 years old, 76 years old. And they were brought up in London, England, in, I think, 1970 or 71. Then they both were interested in esoteric things, spiritual things. Jnanivas Prabhu ended up here in India. He met the devotees here, and he very quickly joined. And then he wrote back to his brother Pankajangiri that he should come to India. So he came, I think, in 1972. And then he was initiated in 73. Jnanivas was initiated in 71. So what to say about they were wonderful souls. I never, in the 25 years that I'd known them, I've never seen them become angry or to say a bad word or a disparaging word about anybody else. In many ways, they were the life and soul of ISKCON Mayapur. They participated in all the festivals. They always went out on the parikramas. They joined in with the festival days for the appearance days of spiritual masters and Krishna himself. And even they would go to people's homes. They would get invitations, which they would never refuse. Even if it was just, the grain giving ceremony for the babies, or even somebody's daughter or son was celebrating a birthday, they would always go there on invitation and speak a few words. But they were the kind of devotees that even if they didn't say anything, you would feel their presence very strongly. So unfortunately, we've lost Pankajangri Prabhu's association temporarily. But I'll just narrate a couple of little things. I don't have a lot, but just to give an idea. So in 1976, Prabhupada came to Mayapur on January the 17th, and he stayed for just over 2 months. So once he got settled in and got his routine going, then as per his daily habit, he was going out in the mornings and visiting our property there in Mayapur. At that time, we only had the Lotus building, which is where Prabhupada was staying on the second floor. And then there was a front wall that Prabhupada had built with the large entry gateway. There was one fairly big kitchen that was constructed as well. So Prabhupada liked to go out every day on walks. He got that advice actually from a doctor in New York in 1967 when he had a near fatal heart attack and they took him to the hospital. And they wanted to do various things, including maybe having an exploratory operation on his brain. As soon as Prabhupada heard that, he told the devotees, take me out of here immediately. So he was quite seriously affected. He was paralyzed all down the left side. So it was like a stroke rather than a heart attack. Anyway, so Srila Prabhupada, he would go on a morning walk every day because one of the doctors in that hospital said, you should tell the old man that he doesn't get enough exercise. So Prabhupada took the doctor's advice and from then on, joining Prabhupada on his morning walks, that was one of the wonderful features of his preaching. There was just Prabhupada and the devotees. He would walk around, say, the botanical gardens in different cities or parks. He would often have very lively discussions with the devotees, the local devotees, mainly about science. I don't think there was ever a day when I was with him. I was traveling with Prabhupada for a year and a half. And I don't think there was ever a day that went by without Prabhupada criticizing modern scientists or modern science, what passes off for that. So likewise, when we went to Mayapur in 1976, I had just joined Prabhupada's party about a month and a half previous to that. Prabhupada was going out every day on his morning walk. So he was very sharp. He would see things that we didn't see. For some examples, Prabhupada, when he came out, usually he came out of his room at just on sunrise. So he would go down onto the ground and walk around the ISKCON property there. Even small things. Like somebody left a light bulb on after sunrise. So Prabhupada chastised them, he was wasting electricity. or if he saw a tap was left open and dripping, then he would again tell the managers this has to be fixed. There was also quite a heavy incident. Sometime, I think after about a week we'd been there, Prabhupada was walking around, and he walked over to where nowadays we put Prabhupada's samadhi, but in those days it was an open area. And we had a number of Bengali families living with the devotees in the ISKCON compound. So he saw there was like a circular building, like a cartwheel, and it had toilets around the outside perimeter. And in the inner part of the circle of the building, then that was where the ladies did their washing and what have you, and the men were on the outside. So Prabhupada walked over to inspect the washing block and the stool houses there, and he poked open the door of one of the cubicles, and it was heaped with stool. The explanation was given that the Bengali villagers, they didn't know how to use a flush toilet. And generally people in the country in India, they go out and pass stool in the fields somewhere. There's usually a designated area. Anyway, most of the devotees in those days were villagers, some of them from Bangladesh. It was around the time of the Bangladesh war when they split from Pakistan. So there were a lot of refugees coming in, and we had to make some arrangement for them. So anyway, the idea was that the toilets, after you'd done your business, you had a bucket of water and you would flush the toilet by hand. There was no piped water or like cisterns. So you had to do it by hand. So because most of them had been brought up just to go out in the fields, so they didn't properly know how to flush the toilets. So they would just pass their stools in the toilet basin and then go out without washing it thoroughly afterwards. So the stool was building up. So Prabhupada, this particular morning, he poked open several doors, and it was the same story all around. The toilets were not flushed. They were bunged up and really making a nasty smell. Prabhupada got quite angry, and immediately he ordered the devotees to cleanse the block, toilet block, very thoroughly. So Prabhupada was going around, and there were various things like that he noted. So he was not very happy with the standard of management at that time. Japataka Maharaj was there, but he was doing a lot of work with the government. He was the one that was doing a lot of the practical management outside of Mayapur. And Bhavananda was there. He was mainly working within our compound. But he also, being from the West, just staying there in the, you know, in the field, looking after the fields, he didn't sometimes find that very satisfactory. So he liked to go out and preach sometimes. So the situation was not much to Prabhupada's liking. He also, on the top floor of the Lotus building, there was some rooms up there. So they put all the brahmacharis in those rooms. So when Prabhupada made his inspection one day of the building, he went up to the top and he saw that the brahmacharis were staying in the top floor. And so immediately he ordered the managers, move them all out, give them rooms on the front wall. But there's to be no brahmacharis or Mayapur residents staying in what Prabhupada considered to be their guest rooms. At that time, not many people came to Mayapur. If they did, it was at weekends. But Prabhupada wanted to utilize the guest rooms that had been built there in the Lotus Building to attract people to come from Calcutta. So as soon as he saw the brahmacharis were in the top floor there, he immediately kicked them out, sent them downstairs to rooms on the front wall. And he made a comment. He said, brahmachari means it will be dirty. So they weren't looking after things. Another problem that we had was that we only had one big water tank, and that was pumped every few days and filled with water. But as more people started arriving, this is in January, February of 1976, more and more devotees were coming for the Mayapur festival. So Prabhupada was anxious to see that everything was being managed properly, but the water kept running out. They'd fill the tank up, but with the extra usage, then it would drain quite quickly. So two or three times Prabhupada himself in his bathroom, the water would stop. So he was a little annoyed about that, why they can't fix it so that there's always enough water. So like this, things were not completely to his satisfaction. And as a result of that, especially this stool house incident, when Prabhupada walked back to the temple, then he greeted the deities. He walked to the Vyasasan, received his Guru Puja, and then he gave the Bhagavatam class. So that day, the class was on Prahlad Maharaj. And the verse mentioned about the interactions of the three modes of material nature. So to give some examples of mode of passion, ignorance, and goodness, Prabhupada cited at least one example he gave about tamaguna, or the mode of ignorance. He said, he gave an example like in chemistry. If you get different chemicals and mix them, some chemicals, if they have alike properties were the same, then when you mix them together, there was no reaction. But if you took a chemical with different qualities and mix that with another chemical, then there would be effervescence. It would fizz up and spray out, whatever. So Prabhupada used this as an example. He said, this is the way that the three modes of material nature work. If you get goodness mixing with goodness, then there's no reaction. If you get goodness mixing with passion, then immediately there'll be some reaction. And if you get goodness or passion mixing with ignorance, then you know it would finish things. So Prabhupada said that in our society, we're trying to create a situation where people can live in the mode of goodness. He said, I know you're all coming from, you know, the West, where Rajagun and Tamagun are very prevalent, but at least here in our temples, we should have a situation of Satwagun. So he said, just like I was rebuking that toilet, so nasty thing. So he said, it's so nasty, but nobody reacted. That means that stool house is in the mode of ignorance. But the people that were living there, they took no notice of them. There was no reaction when they saw that toilet. And so he said, that's ignorance with ignorance, no reaction. So goodness and goodness, no reaction. Rajas, rajas, no reaction. But when there's goodness and when it's confronted with ignorance, then there must be a reaction. He said, why are we giving you the sacred thread, the brahminical thread, upavita? He said, this is not a Brahmin, that when you see such a horrible thing as that sulouse and you don't react, that means that you're also in the mode of ignorance. So why are we giving you the sacred thread? So in this way, Prabhupada very cleverly illustrated in quite stark fashion the differences between ignorance, passion, and goodness. So that way then, Prabhupada was there for 2 months. We arrived on the 17th of January. We left on the 22nd of March. So on February the 20th or 22nd, it was the appearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada's guru. So Prabhupada was very keen that we observe that festival in a very grand fashion. Because we'd only, ISKCON was had only been established in Mayapur for about 4 or 5 years at that point. So, because we bought the land in 1971. So, the appearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So in the morning, Prabhupada rang his bell. I went into his room and he asked me, he said, now just go downstairs. This was probably about 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning after the morning program. Prabhupada had retired up to his rooms. But around about 9, 10 o'clock, he called me and asked me, just see what arrangements have been made for the festival for my Guru Maharaj. So when I went down there, then nobody was there practically, just a handful of people. And those people also had not really come to join in with the festival specifically, but they were just, you know, part of the regular pilgrims that were visiting Mayapur. So Prabhupada, when I reported to Prabhupada that hardly anybody was there, he was, again, not at all happy that he said, on such an important day, that you have not made any special effort to bring people to Mayapur. You should have had some buses, had people coming in from Calcutta so that we could celebrate it properly. But there was no decorations hardly and hardly any visitors. So anyway, Prabhupada decided to push, obviously decided to push on. We went down at 11 o'clock. They had put a very large painting of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on the Vyasasan. And Prabhupada sat in front of the Vyasasan on a straw mat. And there were probably about 90 or 100 devotees there. Achyutananda was there, Jabhitaka Maharaj, Bhavananda, etc. The twins were there, of course, and other devotees. So when Prabhupada gave his talk, then at the end of that, then we were having the festival. So in my diary, which I presume most of you have read, this is from February the 20th, 1976. After Prabhupada had given his speech, we gathered in front of the Vyasasan and performed the Pushpanjali ceremony, an offering of flowers. Prabhupada had Achyutananda Swami chant the 4 pranam prayers to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And then following Prabhupada's lead, we offered a flower to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's picture on the Vyasasan. And this procedure was repeated 3 times. So that's generally the proper way to observe a Pushpanjali ceremony. You chant the pranam mantras if it's one of the acharyas. Then you exclaim Esha Pushpanjali, you throw the flowers, then you get down and offer your obeisances, then you stand up, then again the mantras, again the flowers, again you kneel down. So like this three times or 4 times. And then there's a big arati after that. So we had the Pushpanjali ceremony. Then we all stood up and gathered around the Vyasa stand and started the kirtan. So Prabhupada called for Banu Das, who is a Japanese-Canadian brahmachari from the Nam Hatha party. He came forward to offer the arati. So that Nam Hatha party, that's different from what we know it now. Basically, there was a group of brahmacharis that were being trained up to collect money by Guru Kripa Swami, and they gave literally hundreds of thousands of dollars for the Vrindavan and then Bombay and finally the Mayapur projects. So Banu was what part of that team. He was very expert at doing pujas. So he came forward. Prabhupada told him to offer the arati. The special feast, cooked on in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's honor, was brought in and set out on some low wooden tables directly in front of the Vyasasan. Prabhupada stood in the front and he played his karatals while Achyutananda Maharaj led an ecstatic kirtan, which had us all jumping very high in the air. So during the kirtan, Prabhupada called me over and he asked me to gather a sample of every preparation that had been made for the feast and put some of everything on his plate and then take it up to his room. He wanted to check what the devotees had cooked to glorify his Guru Maharaj. He also wanted to offer his own respects by honoring Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's remnants. So after the program, Prabhupada returned upstairs and he ate the feast. He was happy with all the arrangements, but again he appeared disappointed that only about 100 guests had come. And in fact, during his massage, which he took before the ceremonies, Prabhupada told us he had criticized the management for erecting such a large building and then not inviting anybody to come to it, only local people and nobody from Calcutta. He remarked very strongly, he said, only the deity worship program is going nicely. Referring to the two English identical twin brothers who are the head pujaris, Prabhupada declared, just these two brothers, Pankajangri and Jnanivas, there is no comparison. Everybody should know there is no complaint. So although in many of the areas of service there, Prabhupada was not so happy, but although he didn't appear to converse with them very much, but they were so tuned into what Prabhupada wanted and they were so expert at what they did. And Prabhupada noticed that. And especially, of course, they were looking after little Radha Madhava. And Prabhupada was very pleased with them. So as you said, those two twins, there is no comparison. Everybody should know there is no complaint. So that's one little story. I had some personal interchanges because they were identical twins. So it was often very difficult to figure out who was who. You didn't know. You start a conversation with them, you wouldn't know whether you were talking to Jnanivas or Pankajangri. If you lived in Mayapur for long enough, gradually you get used to seeing them. And some varying small features might be a little bit different. So you could distinguish which one you were talking to by studying them very carefully. So I remember one time I had gone to Australia for some business or other, and I saw in the temple there in Sydney one of the brothers, the twin brothers. So I went over because I'd settled in Mayapur by that time, so we were good friends. So I went over and we started chatting, and he was on a tour, and they'd been invited to various temples in Australia. So as we were talking, then I asked him, I said, so how is Pankajangiri? And the reply came, oh, I'm fine, thank you very much. So I spent 20 minutes talking to him. I thought it was Jnaniverse. It was actually Pankajangiri. So as soon as I said, how is Pankajangiri? He replied, well, I'm fine, thank you very much. So that was another little exchange. And let's see, there was one other incident. I'll just see if I can find that. Yeah, one time I had to ring up the deity department, and there's an internal phone system, or there used to be. So I rang up the deity department, and somebody picked it up. And then as soon as they spoke, I knew it was one of the twins. However, I didn't know which one. So I thought, I won't get caught out this time. I'll ask, who is it that's speaking? So I said, okay, who am I talking to, Pankajangiri or Jnaniverse? So the reply came, oh, Janani, oh, sorry, no, Pankajangiri. So even he got puzzled who he was. They're so identical. So anyway, that's a couple of small stories about the twins. As I say, if you go onto YouTube, you'll find probably a lot of material in the next few days. We filmed. Nowadays, of course, we got so many cameras, etc. So the whole story of Pankajangiri Prabhu now is available. You can watch it on YouTube, mayapur.tv. So anyway, his going has been a very great loss. I don't know what we'll do to replace that. You can't replace it. But also with his twin brother, twins practically, they're like one soul in two bodies. So now Jnaniverse Prabhu has been left on his own, so to speak, with his brother having moved on. So we'll have to see how things go gradually in the future. But they were certainly very beloved to all the devotees in Mayapur. As I mentioned before, any function that was taking place, it didn't matter what it was, the twins would be there just to give their blessings, etc. The other day I was reading, I forget which Shastra, unfortunately that's my affliction nowadays, but I was reading, about the qualities of a devotee. And I read one statement from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, I think it was, about the qualities of a Paramahamsa. So one of the main qualities of a Paramahamsa is that they never criticize. They're equally disposed to every living being. They never criticize anybody. They're always calm and quiet. As I was reading this description, I thought, well, this is proof that these two brothers are actually Paramahamsas. Always very gentle, always open, very friendly, just showing the example. Although they both of them would give a Srimad Bhagavatam class every day, every week, but they were not, you know, pushy people. That just very gentle purified. So I think that Pankajangiri Prabhu must definitely have gone on to Goloka Vrindavan. Maybe he's in the Kirtan party of Lord Chaitanya. There is a section in a purport where Prabhupada says that the devotees that joined him to spread this Krishna consciousness movement, they were brought here specifically for that purpose by Lord Chaitanya. So we can understand that Pagajangiri Prabhu must be one of those eternal parishads or friends of Lord Chaitanya. And wherever he goes, then his entourage go with him. Actually, in New York in 1976, we were going back to the temple in the car, and Rameshwara Swami at that time, he asked Srila Prabhupada, he said that we know that when Krishna appears in this world, he doesn't just come by himself, but he comes with his associates. Some are born before the Lord appears, some are born afterwards, just like with Lord Chaitanya's entourage, Narottam Das Thakur. It's one of the very important acharyas in our line, but he appeared after Lord Chaitanya. So anyway, the question was asked by Rameshwara, that is it proper to understand that when Krishna appears, or Lord Chaitanya appears, when the spiritual master appears, he said, is it proper to think that they are part of the Lord's entourage and come specifically to assist the guru in his activities? And Prabhupada smiled, said, yes, they're sent by Lord Chaitanya to help to spread this mission. So Srila Prabhupada, because he had his entourage, and definitely we can say personalities like Jayaprataka Maharaj, like Pagajangri and Jananivas, etc., they're all part of the eternal entourage of Lord Chaitanya. And wherever he goes, then they go as well. Of course, the time span is a little different, but that's the idea. So I can take a few. Is it too early for questions, or does anybody have any comments that they would like to make? Mm-hmm.
Če pa kdo kakšno vprašanje, lahko vpraša kar direktno, lahko pa napišete v chat, pa bom jaz prebrala. So, let's see if we have some questions.
Anybody has a question? Of those who are here, how many of you have been to Mayapur? Is there a way of counting? I don't know. I see a few hands going up on the screens there. So... the question was asked by some of the devotees whether or not Pagajangri Prabhu should be interred in a samadhi or have his body burnt and the ashes put in the Ganges. There was some discussion about that because they were lifelong brahmacharis, of course, but the etiquette is that only sannyasis should be put into a samadhi. So, again, you can see on YouTube the whole procession from the temple. They set off at the Panchatattva temple. They brought his body in for darshan in front of Panchatattva. Then we went in front of Radha Madhav and the eight gopis. From there, in front of Prahlad and Sringadev. And then from there, around the ring road of Prabhupada Samadhi, and then out across the road to Prabhupada Ghat. And then there was a big funeral pyre that was erected there, and the body was burnt. So those ashes, I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen to them. There is another system where you can keep in a pot the ashes from a departed soul. That pot can be either kept at home or it can be used in different ways. Perhaps the ashes can be put on the grounds or whatever. So anyway, Pagajangri Prabhu, his body was burnt as per the custom. So questions, anybody? or comments.
Hare Krishna, Hare Sharif Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Can you hear me well?
I can, yes.
Yes, I have one question. Once I read that there was a comment in 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about the distance of moon from the earth. And that you give some comment to Srila Prabhupada, if you can explain more about this story.
Well, I actually, somebody wrote to me a few weeks ago about this particular aspect of Vedic cosmology. In the 8th canto, there's a description of the demigods and the demons fighting a ferocious battle. And that fighting was going on, they were on the shore of the ocean of milk. So the fighting was going on so ferociously that drops of blood were spraying up into the atmosphere and reached as far as the sun. So when Prabhupada translated that, now you have to check me on this because I haven't read this for quite a while, but he put in a purport there saying that it's recorded here that the droplets of blood went up as high as the sun, but it doesn't mention the moon. So that this is proof, if you like, that the moon is further away than the sun is. So when I read that, that it was the moon is further away from the earth than the sun is. So when I read that, then I suddenly realized that the battle was actually on the shore of the ocean of milk and not on the earth. So the droplets of blood were not coming from the earth. They were going up into the outer atmosphere. But when Prabhupada translated it, he saw there was an opportunity to, again, discredit modern science. And, you know, the distance of the moon away from the earth and the sun was always a big topic. And Prabhupada always, say 95% of the time that he talked about that, he always said that they never went to the moon. So anyway, the problem I faced was that I'd read this text, and they had a system that when Prabhupada was writing the BBT, they would get the edited, they would get the typed up manuscripts, edit it all, of course, lay it out, make it into books. So the first two copies of every new volume of the Bhagavatam were sent by courier to Srila Prabhupada so that he could see the latest edition of his work. So when the 8th canto was printed, it was sent to Srila Prabhupada. We were in India, I believe at that time around September. So one of the perks of being Prabhupada's servant was that when he was resting or you were not, you know, on call, we would get these advanced copies of the Srimad Bhagavatam and read them. So when I was reading it and I read this remark that Prabhupada had made in his purport about the moon and the sun, then I realized actually the fighting was going on the shore of the ocean of milk and not on the earth. So the distance mentioned is different. So I wondered what to do. So I thought I'd better bring this to Srila Prabhupada himself. And so I went into Prabhupada's room and he asked me, yes, what's that? And so I told him, you know, that I'd read in this purport that the moon and sun, the distances, they were measured from the earth, from the ocean of milk. So when Prabhupada heard that, he had me read it out to him, actually. He realized that actually the context of the fight was not from the earth, but from the milk ocean. And therefore, the distance of the sun and the moon is different. So when Prabhupada heard that, then immediately said, oh, he gave a gentle laugh. He said, I thought when I read this, this was an opportunity to further discredit the scientists. He said, all right, so you tell the BBT that paragraph should be removed. Many years later, when they reprinted the eighth canto or revised, the editing, I was contacted by Dravida Prabhu, who was one of the main editors, and Jayadvaita Swami. And so in compliance with that request by Prabhupada, then that paragraph was removed from the eighth canto. So I don't, does that help?
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
I mean, there are some contentious issues. There will always be. But we take whatever Prabhupada said. There was opportunity. If he wanted, he could have rectified that paragraph. But he didn't. He just told us to remove it. And he never referred to it again. So we just take what Prabhupada says. We may or may not understand it properly. For me, it was a small dilemma that maybe, when Prabhupada, when he put that paragraph into his purports, and then it, later on he had it removed, then it might be a puzzle. A spiritual master is not supposed to make mistakes. So at least for me, my rationale was that the distance is given for the sun and the moon from the earth is correct, but that Prabhupada had just placed that, particular comment or incident, cited that incident as being a problem of context rather than the validity of what the statement was. The validity of the statement in the Bhagavatam that the moon is further away than the sun, we uphold that. But it was just a contextual problem. So I kind of rationalized that with the story about how there was a guru and his disciple. There was some rope lying on the ground inside his hut. The guru went in and immediately saw, oh, there's a snake. So the disciple came and grabbed hold of it and actually discovered it was a rope. But the guru had him throw the rope outside because it was a snake. But then when the guru went out and saw it again, he said, oh, all right, it's not a snake, it's a rope. So he had him put it back. So that example is given sometimes in terms of how we understand the comments of the acharyas. Sometimes there may appear to be some small discrepancy, but still the mood or the attitude is the important thing. The circumstances that may be presented in the statement may or may not be correct, but we accept whatever the spiritual master says, and in that way then we get enlightened by Krishna from within. So that was the way that I personally dealt with that. So I don't know whether that gives you a clear indication or not. Does that satisfy you?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Uruk Rama here. May I ask you one question?
Yes, go ahead.
Hare Krishna. Because you are staying in Mayapur, and we in Slovenia, we are also now for more than 2-3 years, when Janini Vas Prabhu was here, giving donations for the TOVP temple.
With Lord Nityananda's Padukas.
Padukas, yes, that's right, yeah. Yes. Can you maybe tell us how is the progress going on, especially in these COVID times?
Well, yes, it's a It's been a very difficult situation. We had planned, you know, certain events like the installation of a new deity of Prabhupada, and we were trying to figure out, set a date for when the existing deities will be moved over into the new temple. So that means the opening of the new temple. Initially we would get, because Ambarish donated nearly $30 million for that building. That would guarantee that it would go through the first phase of putting up the structure. And then Braj Vilas Prabhu is the main collector, raising funds. And so I think at one point they were getting about $7 or $8 million a year in pledges from all over the world. That was the purpose of that tour, with Jnanavas going around. The idea was, our schedule for building and finishing the building was based on that amount of income. But a lot of that income was only pledges. It was not cash. So as soon as the coronavirus thing struck, and then they put the whole world on lockdown. Nowadays, here in Mayapur, we're still on lockdown since the last 2 weeks. Sometimes the lockdown is there and sometimes not. But the end result is that absolutely nobody is coming to the temple. And many people who had made pledges are unable to fulfill them because of the difficulties caused by losing their jobs or their businesses. The whole world's economy has been thrown into disarray. It's going to take some years to get it working again. So it's been a real problem for us, because as soon as the virus lockdowns began, that was it. Our income was immediately finished, especially here in Mayapur, because a lot of what we collected, or a good portion of it, came from, you know, the tens of thousands of pilgrims that come here every year, and what to speak about Gopurnima when there's a few hundred thousand people that come. So it's very difficult to be in a situation where all of a sudden all your money is cut off, and I mean all the money. There's very little source of income since the COVID problem. We're still in that situation. Something's coming in, but not what we really need. So we've had to rearrange some of the schedules. We've had to slow down a lot of the work. We had to send workers home because we couldn't afford to pay them. We've slashed the running budget of the Mayapur temple to at least a half of what it normally is. So it's been a very, very difficult situation. But we're confident that Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada will continue to bless us with the amount of Lakshmi that we need to keep the project running. All the functions of the temple are going on, but it's been a real problem. So let's see. We're planning, or they've been advertising, that a new deity of Srila Prabhupada is going to be installed on the what we call the pujari floor of the new building. Last year, I think it was, or maybe the year before, they decided to complete at least one floor, what we call the pujari floor, so that we have somewhere, if we need it, we can worship the deities there, and the work for finishing the building can still go on. So they've had to change the dates a couple of times. Now the new target, I think, is October, Srila Prabhupada's 125th anniversary. So they're hopeful that by the end of the year at least, there is some funds coming in, and that can be used to install the new deity of Prabhupada. He will be worshipped there, and at the same time, the rest of the building will still be worked upon by the, you know, the different companies that we've hired. So let's see how it's going. When the virus lockdowns have been lifted, then we see immediately, you know, a few thousand people come and they have darshan, etc. Things pick up a little bit. We do get some funds, but nothing substantial. So, you know, it's a struggle. But in Krishna consciousness, sometimes you have to struggle to prove that you are, or to increase your attachment to the lotus feet of the Lord. It's like the Pandavas, when they were sent to the forest, nobody could imagine such brilliant personalities would be sent in exile to the forest. But for them, it didn't worry them. They had Krishna with them most of the time, and they were able to continue on with various activities. So in the same way, then, although they struggled, eventually they came out on top. And the struggles that they went through, you know, really, in one sense, for materialists, would have strained the relationship. But with the Pandavas, it increased their affection and their sense of, you know, trying to surrender to Krishna. So in the same way, we look upon this present problem as being a kind of a test. We continue going out and doing what we do. The fundraising is still going on. The temple functions are still going on. We're being forced to rely on Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada to bring this wonderful building to completion. So it's going on. I mean, in Europe, you've got the example of the Vatican, which I believe took about 200 years to finish. So we've been working on this building since 2007 or 2008. So what's that about? 20 years or something, less than 20 years. So let's see how we go. Krishna is, as Prabhupada used to say, Krishna is not a pauper. He's actually a wealthy man. So we'll see what happens. Any other questions?
Thank you, Prabhu, for this wonderful report from my
perspective. Yes, I have one question. Hare Krishna.
Yes, Prabhu. Yes, Prabhu.
Maybe you know where one can get the previous blueprint from the previous temple of Vedic Planetarium. You know the first one?
Yeah, well, it depends on which temple, which blueprint you're talking about. In 1976, because Vrindavan Temple had been opened, Bombay Temple was well on the way to completion. Prabhupada then began to focus his attention on Mayapur. And previously he'd spoken about, you know, the temple of the Vedic Planetarium. So in 76, Prabhupada had given that name. Sorry, what was the question again?
Maybe you know where can I get the blueprint?
Right. So at that time, our main architect designer was Saurabh Prabhu. So during 1976, he worked on a plan for Mayapur for its development. There were some drawings that I remember seeing, you know, how the temple would be. And in fact, when the devotees came at the beginning of 1977 for the Gaur Purnima festival, Saurabh had a design. He had a model made of his current design. So that model was like one gigantic, not like on a pyramid, but like a Gopuram, if you like. It was like one gigantic dome. And around the outside of the dome, there was 108 small domes. So the model for that was made. That was placed on a stand, like a brick stand, on the corner of the Lotus building, and everybody could see this is the future temple. Unfortunately, of course, Prabhupada left us at the end of that year in November 77, and the money that was supposed to be used for developing Mayapur was instead diverted to building the two samadhis, the Vrindavan Samadhi and the Mayapur Samadhi. So for quite a few years, we had no funds available to take up the work on Temple of Vedic Planetarium. And even when that was done, then we had to, you know, start again with collecting. And so anyway, different teams came in. There was three or four different well-known architectural companies that were contacted. I remember two or three of them, one fellow from Gujarat, somebody else from London, another famous architect from Boston in America, I think it was. They all came, they were shown the drawings. They came up with different ideas themselves. Eventually, none of them were what we particularly wanted either. Then there was the attempt by Padasabhanam Prabhu, who was the disciple of Harikesh at that time. So Harikesh was in charge for some time of the Mayapur project, one of the co-GBCs. And this fellow, Padasabhanam, he was a new devotee, but he was an expert architect. So he was brought to Mayapur. So he worked on some drawings and plans. They came up with the idea that the new temple should be built entirely from granite blocks rather than bricks or cement, because that way it would last a lot longer. But the more that they developed these ideas, I mean, eventually by the end of the 1990s or the beginning of 2000, the model that was being presented was going to apparently cost about $700 to $800 million by the time it was complete. So that wasn't very practical either. It was a beautiful temple. We actually did, there was a BTG that came out during that period with the plans for that new temple by Padasabhanam Prabhu. But then, again, the same problem was with money. We couldn't possibly afford $700 or $800 million. There was a group that had been originally formed by Srila Prabhupada called the Sri Mayapur Project Development Committee, SMPDC. So the SMPDC had four directors. Harikesh was one of them. Ambarish was another one. Forget who the other one. Oh, Abhiram Prabhu was. And somebody else. Oh, Japataka Swami. How can I forget him? So they took charge of different features, seeing them get developed. Japataka Maharaj was put in charge of developing the exhibits and the preaching work for, through that medium. So anyway, the end result was that it was too expensive. The SMPDC were not collecting money. They're just spending it. So eventually Ambarish stopped paying any further money from his own pocket, and that brought the building to a halt. Then with the permission of the GBC, Ambarish formed a new team and with himself as chairman. His situation economically had improved. His mother had died and left him quite a lot of money, some hundreds of millions of dollars. So he then offered, you know, to put the money into this first part of the development, the superstructure. And he put into the bank about $25 million in one hit. And there's been other things that he spent money on as well. So that's, you know, the building as it is now. But previously in the 1990s with Padasabhanam, he had many plans. Sadaputta Prabhu was brought onto the team as well to design the exhibits. And he had a plan. There was going to be four wings coming off from the main building, and they would house different kinds of dioramas, multimedia exhibits, and it would be advertised as the temple of the Vedic planetarium. Anyway, so all that's scrapped. Now, if you want to get drawings of the present building, you can contact Sadbhuj Prabhu. He has an office full of drawings and, you know, the plan for developing the temple in a certain way. Now, Sadaputa Prabhu, he was brought onto the team in about 1992 for some years until the end of the SMPDC. So he had also kept in his own archive some drawings and plans for Mayapur. And in particular, he had outlined about 55 different exhibits that would be built, purpose-built for this building. So, of course, unfortunately, Sadaputa Prabhu left his body in 2008, I think it was. So he was not able to continue on, obviously, but we were gifted his whole personal archive and library that was shipped out from Alachua, where he was living in Florida. And we have in Calcutta, we have the Bhaktivedanta Research Center, which was a project that myself and Pranava Prabhu from Sweden co-founded. It's a library. We have about 18,000 different works in that library. So Sadaputa's entire collection was donated to the BRC, as we call it, and is in fact kept there in, you know, nice order and shape. It's sitting there in the Calcutta Library. So if you're really interested in following up how to get those drawings, etc., you can contact the BRC and they may be able to help you out with that. There were actually some other Mayapur-related documents that somebody showed me a year or 2 years ago, which I think were here in Mayapur. Now I'm not sure where they are, but maybe Pancharatna Prabhu may know. So that's where they are anyway. And if you are coming to India at some point, if they ever let you out of Europe, then you can go there and you can sort through all the materials left over, mainly from Sadaputa. So, do you, what, you have a particular interest in seeing those old first attempts?
No, the one in particular, the one I think it is Padasevana Prabhu.
All right, that.
I think it is from this time. The one, the one which Sridhar Maharaj was doing fundraising, if you remember.
Yes. Well, you let's see. What was I going to say? Sorry, I've just slipped my mind. Yeah, anyway, they should be there if you contact. I think that you can get a copy of that BTG. They did a special Mayapur development BTG. You could write to the BTG in Alachua in Florida and ask them if they've got any copies that you could get from them. I do remember that BTG. It was very gorgeous. It was very inspiring. I think it was probably about 1995 or 96 when that came out. But, you know, you can do a bit of research and find that BTG magazine and the maybe other materials as well to support that.
Okay, thank you very much.